to another episode of the Conscious Junkie podcast show. Today I am joined by the beautiful Brit Hunter, who is one of Talala's amazing Vinyasa teachers. She's 33 and from Ohio in America, where she used to practice law. However, Brit wanted to change her life a couple of years ago, and she traveled to India, where she met the man of her dreams, who will become her husband in just 3 weeks after they met. Everyone thought that it would end up as just another holiday romance, but they were wrong, because we're 4 years later now and they are still together, and Brit is even writing a book about it. Mm-hmm. Welcome to the show, Brit.
Thank you, Lottie.
I'm so happy to have you. First and foremost, because you've been one of my incredible teachers here in Talala and colleagues. Mm-hmm. And also because, like, I think it was on the first day that we met that you told me something about the book that you're writing.
Yes.
So I'm gonna ask some more about that.
Okay.
And before we start with that, it's just funny, guys, because you probably hear it. I'm still in Sri Lanka that we record this podcast, but you hear this little Sri Lankan guy sweeping. Just as we pressed play, he started sweeping, but I guess that's just life. Okay, Brit, are you a full-time yoga teacher?
In Sri Lanka, yes.
In Sri Lanka, yes.
In Australia, where I live now, no. Okay. In Australia, I'm actually working again in law, in immigration law. But so I'm doing this full time, and then because I never wanted to make yoga, well, at one point in my life, I did have yoga as my source of income. And I think it's really great when some people can do this and they have a really healthy relationship with yoga and money. But I just couldn't really figure out that perfect balance between being a full-time yoga teacher and then worrying about this also supporting my lifestyle or supporting my life of being able to, you know, not have to sit in class and count how many students I had in class, and feeling really kind of funny when I would charge my private students a higher rate because, you know, I just needed to charge a little bit higher for my time.
Yeah.
And I found myself often actually giving my private lessons for free because I would think, oh, maybe that wasn't good enough for them or something. And then I'd think, oh, I'll just give it to them for free. They're one of my first. So, you know, and then I kind of realized I was devaluing myself, and this ended up manifesting as almost a devaluation of my own profession.
Mm-hmm.
So I fortunately found this job in law, which was really nice because I could go back to activating that side of my brain, which I really love.
It's so different, right?
Yeah. And it's because in law school, we are trained how to think a certain way. And so then when we kind of lose this like opportunity to use that side of our brain, it does kind of feel a little bit like something's missing. And so it ended up working out perfectly. For the first 2.5 years I was living in Australia, I was teaching yoga full time.
Yeah.
And I was really fortunate that my husband was able to financially support me.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was really also feeling a little bit devalued in myself, where I was relying on somebody else for a source of income after having been a lawyer and able to support myself for so long. And then, and relying on somebody else was really, as an independent woman, it was really uncomfortable.
I totally get that.
Yeah.
So when you were living back in the States, until what year did you live in the States?
I lived in the States up until the end of 2014.
And back then you weren't a yoga teacher yet.
I was actually. Mm. So I became a yoga teacher a little bit as a joke. I finished law school, and halfway through law school, I kind of thought, oh, I don't know if this is for me, because I really wanted to help people. I wanted to work in immigration law and help refugees.
Mm.
But I started to think that maybe being a lawyer was just a bit too type A, a little bit too intense. It wasn't a much more kind of, you know, a little bit grounded and
serious.
Yeah, it was just so about money and so much about these things that I just never really cared about. And a lot of the culture is to do, you know, based around alcohol and drinking and partying and things like this. And just didn't really seem like it was a good fit for me. And so I almost quit halfway through. My mom was like, no, you should just finish it.
Yeah.
But anyway, so I thought, okay, well, I'll finish law school, but I doubt I'll even pass the bar exam because I didn't feel really passionate about it. And so I was practicing yoga twice a day every day because it was kind of the only place that I felt
While I was studying,
because studying was just so intense, and I just needed something to counterbalance that. And so every morning at 6 a.m., I was going to yoga, and then going to class, and then working, and then, you know, going to yoga before I was going to sleep. So it was just a really really beautiful opportunity to kind of have, being able to practice the law side of things, and then also have yoga
incorporated.
But then, so kind of as a joke, because I was practicing so much, and I kind of thought about doing the teacher training just to
What age were you when you thought about doing the teacher training?
Well, in law school, so I was 25 or 26. I forget my age anymore.
That's
I don't even know anymore. But yeah, it was 2013.
Okay.
And yeah, so kind of as a joke, I thought, okay, well, if I don't pass the bar exam, I'll just become a yoga teacher. Ha ha ha. That was my, you know, my plan B was to be a yoga teacher, which not many people are like, oh, if I don't pass the bar, I'll become a yoga teacher.
No.
They think, I'll take it again. But it's a 50% passage rate. And so
50 only.
Yeah. So I really didn't think I was going to pass. I wasn't that type of person of being so intense. I'm really disciplined and studying all the time. And yeah, so when I was studying, when other people were studying late into the night, I was kind of like,
You were already thinking or dreaming about your life as a yoga teacher.
Yeah, just enjoying my life. I didn't want to be stressed out. And so many people were so stressed out. And I just didn't want to feel that. I didn't want to live that way. And but yeah, I passed the bar, of course. And I think I actually passed the exam because I was not stressed. So it's 3 days long. And you have little breaks in between each section. And so during the breaks, other people, like somebody actually got up and had to leave and go vomit because they were so stressed out in the middle of the exam. And other people are like, they're barely able to eat their lunch because they're just so stressed out.
Yeah.
And there was a tree out front, and I just started doing, like, dangling from the tree and climbing the tree and hanging upside down and just doing some yoga and meditation and pranayama and things like that. And honestly, I think that's why I passed. I don't think it was anything to do with
you
knowing more. I just wasn't.
You knew
stressed.
How to breathe and to relax yourself.
Yeah, which was
because
I mean there were students that were, you know, my colleagues in law school that were way better, you know, with everything in law school.
Mm-hmm.
Like they were much, much higher in the ranking system, and yeah, they, you know, so unfortunately some of them didn't pass on the first go, and I think it's because they put so much pressure on themselves. And
yeah.
A lot of them, you know, their parents were lawyers or grandparents
were
lawyers.
It's a big problem, I think, in this society.
Yeah.
So much pressure on people, it's very sad.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Whereas I was the first one in my family to go to postgraduate education, so.
Wow.
So I didn't have any pressure. Some people might find that more stress-inducing. For me, I was just like, I'm the first one, so if I don't make it, no harm done. I don't have any kind of unrealistic ideals to live up to of family members or anything like that. So I was just kind of accepting whatever happened. And
so then you passed, and
I
then
passed.
Was that the moment that you first teacher training right after?
I had already started it when I had taken the bar exam. It was about a week in. And so I was like, oh, okay, well, I'm going to become a lawyer now. And I was immediately hired on as an associate attorney where I had been the law clerk. So, which was also very fortunate. A lot of people struggle to find a job, but I was just really lucky because I specialize in immigration. Not that many people back then. Now immigration in America is so glamorous,
mm-hmm.
but back then we didn't have a president who was trying to build a wall, so so immigration wasn't quite so interesting. So I was one of the few people that was willing to do immigration law, and so it was easy for me to get a job. But I kept doing the training because I was loving it. So I had a beautiful office with a, you know, view over the State House in Columbus, and
probably super busy.
I was
with
pretty
this
busy,
job,
yeah,
and then
pretty
the
busy.
Training.
But yeah, it wasn't too bad because the training, it was over a 9 month period, so it wasn't an intensive. It was a we met every Thursday, I think, from like 6 to 9 or something. It was actually perfect because I could integrate all of the information that
That's
I was
true.
Learning
yeah.
like throughout the week and
mm-hmm.
applying it to my high-stress job, and then we'd be talking about things like parigraha, like non-grasping, and
yeah,
then I would
that's
think, oh,
fantastic.
Okay. Yeah, it was actually a super great
gets
way
to
integrate.
To embody that way, yeah.
Yeah, and so, but then I would close my office door and then be doing handstands against my office door, and my colleagues would be like, what is she doing in there? And they'd be like, what's happening? Like, oh, I'm just practicing my handstands. And
oh, that's so funny.
So I think they all probably assumed that I wouldn't have stayed for very long.
Yeah.
Because
how long did you stay in the end for that?
So I passed the bar in November 2013, and I quit my job as a lawyer in May 2014.
Oh,
so not even, I didn't even make it a whole year. But, and then I actually didn't even finish my yoga teacher training until July 2014. So, but I had been offering classes to my colleagues at the law firm and to other friends just for free, just because I loved it. And I was offering all these little free classes for the community, and I felt like I was doing so much more for the world. I felt like it was such a rewarding profession, even though I wasn't earning any money. I felt like it was more rewarding than anything that I was doing as a lawyer. And so a series of events happened that ended up kind of making me decide to quit my job at this law firm. And I started doing some solo practice, just helping family with contracts and things like that. The oil and gas industry is quite big where my parents are from. And so just helping them kind of navigate through contracts and things like this. And then I ended up opening up a small yoga studio in my parents' basement, actually in my hometown of 3,000 people in the middle
of
nowhere.
What is your hometown?
It's called Barnesville.
Barnesville.
Okay. It's very small. I think maybe we now have 4,000 people, which is exciting. But and you know, I think a lot of people thought I was practicing witchcraft. The women would arrive. It was usually women between like 50 and 60, and they were beautiful, amazing, amazing women, but never had the opportunity to really get in touch with themselves or their bodies. Like,
especially from a small town like that.
They married young, they had kids young, so their lives were devoted to their parents, then their husbands, then their children. So for the very first time, I remember the first class I led, and I just had them place their hand over their heart and just to connect in with their body and with their breath. And I think every single one of them burst into tears because they had never done that before. And so I realized it was just, one of these really desperately needed things. And it ended up being really beautiful. We just had a really small group of women, and like sometimes their husbands would kind of drive up in their pickup trucks and kind of wait to pick them up, and I'd be like, "Oh, come in for some chai," and they'd be like,
"Nah,
I don't know what you're doing."
I don't want it.
And they were kind of like, "What are you doing to my wife? Because she's really happy these days."
Yeah,
you should come in and find out.
Well, you could say thank you. Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
But then, not long after you went to India.
Yeah,
because it tasted for more.
Yeah,
you wanted more of it.
Yeah, well, a lot of things happened. I had a really tumultuous few years in America.
20s.
Yeah. 20s are rough, eh? I'm really glad to be in my 30s. So many people are worried about aging. Like, being in your 30s is really nice. It's really settling. There's not so much confusion and stress and insecurity. But yeah, I had a lot of, and I was getting a lot of panic attacks. I don't know if it was a residual thing from law school or what, but I had a lot of panic attacks and just a lot of things going on. And I just needed to do something. I needed to be shaken up. I needed the world to kind of just
steer
shake
your
me.
Soul and your body, everything.
Exactly. And part of me is kind of, I'm a pretty rational person, I think, being a lawyer as well. So part of me is kind of, I like the idea of casting my fate to the wind, but still having an active participation in my life. And so I kind of, I found this website called Yoga Trade, where they have all these different
yoga
opportunities.
Yes.
It's really, really useful for anybody that as a yoga teacher looking
I never reply because I think everyone replies and there's such a small chance that you get hired.
Well, it was...
I never replied.
I think it was just... this was a while ago. I think it was actually quite a bit smaller than it is now. I think now it's massive.
You know it. I know it. I'm from...
Yeah. But I applied to actually 6 different places. And I'm, my heritage is Greek. And so there was like a beautiful resort in Santorini and like sailing retreats Croatia and like these beautiful eco villas in Portugal and this kind of ratty looking hostel in India. And so I just applied to all of them. I just applied to basically the first ones I saw. And I was like, right, okay, so this is me taking an active role in my life where I say, okay, I'm going to go somewhere. And then I let fate decide where I was going to go. So I said, the first place to respond is where I'll go. And of course, I'm thinking it's going to be Greece because my heritage. And I'm like, yes. It's in the stars that I'll be in Greece and I'll connect with my family heritage and it'll all make sense. And of course, the first place to respond was compared to these resorts that I was applying to, it was just, I was going to be living in
a
dorm, things like that. Yeah. So the hostel was like, oh, we need a yoga teacher in January. Can you come? And I was like, yes, I'll be there in January.
And you went.
Yeah. So I booked my flight and...
And then fast forward to the moment that you met Mitch, your loving husband.
I'm
so happy that I met him.
Ah, he's amazing.
Because that happened, that journey, right?
Yes, it did. Well, and it's funny because I had ended some relationships had come to an end before I left. And I gave myself a wedding ring and was like, I'm never getting married. And I just want to devote this time of travel to myself and being an independent woman. And
it's about self-love and self-exploration.
And I was like, I'm going to be a single mom and travel until I die. Like, I just really had this big plan of being mother. With international children. Basically an Angelina Jolie with some, I don't know how I was going to fund all of this. But in my mind, this was the plan. And so 2 weeks after arriving into India, I went with my dad, who wanted to make sure that
he wanted to drop his baby girl off.
Yeah, which is funny because he's never really been, he had when he was younger, but never really been out of the country. So for him, to, from the middle of America,
that's a big step.
For him to go to India, I was like, are you sure? And he was like, yes, I'm going. I don't know why. I feel like I have to go, but I have to go. And so he came with me and we traveled around. And we arrived at the hostel where I was going to be living, and my dad was set to leave the following, or 2 days later. But the very day that I arrived was the day that also Mitch arrived. And he has a really serendipitous way that he arrived, which is basically he was in Delhi and had planned on staying somewhere else, but the internet wasn't working, and the only place in all of Goa that had a working website was Wanderer's Hostel, which is where I was. And so it's kind of like he had planned on being somewhere else, and the fates kind of took him there. So, but yeah, when we first met, it was, you know, it wasn't one of these like, bam, oh, I love this man. I love at first sight. I'm going to spend the rest of my life with him. It was actually like, oh, he seems nice.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was just like, he was very, I could tell he was very keen. And, you know, I thought he was handsome and interesting and really fun. And, but I was really not looking for something like that. And
no, so, because you were getting married with yourself.
Yeah, exactly. I was already married. I couldn't be dating anybody else. I'd be cheating on myself. And so, but we just, every time we spent any time together, it was just perfect. I mean, I used to have all these, you know, conversations basically in my head about philosophy and, well, basically life
purpose.
Just everything that nobody was ever able to, you know, I would talk about it and some people would just be like, oh, Brittany, like, oh, here she goes again, dreaming or whatever. But he was the first person to actually not only listen to what I was saying, but actually have something to reply with. And he would change my perceptions and or offer an alternative point of view on something that was already kind of out there. And so it was just so nice to have somebody to actually have these conversations with. And and we just shared so much in common. I mean, knowing him now, knowing him more deeply than I knew him then, I see that we are almost the exact same person, which is funny because I'm from America and he's from New Zealand and we meet in India and, you know, on some level.
You live in Australia.
We live in Australia, yeah. We were just in Sri Lanka. And yeah, I mean, so many things that were quite different. You know, he was a surfer and grew up by the ocean. And some little things are different, but at the core, you know, it just
feels exactly the same. This is a bit of a cliche, but it felt like a soul connection. Soul connection.
Yeah, perfectly. And
But then still, okay, this connection is there.
Yeah.
And then how do you end up getting married 3 weeks after? How did that happen?
I mean, it's
so funny.
India's like a mother, like a very meddling mother, who she just kept putting on so many romantic moments for us. And we weren't even trying. I mean, you know, I think we were both really enjoying each other's company and having fun and like, kind of like on one
curious
level, kind of like, like he's probably leaving. She's staying here. This probably won't go anywhere. But like, every time we hung out, something really romantic would happen. So the second time we hung out, we were just driving on a back road after yoga. We went to yoga Tibet together. And driving home, we just had this really amazing experience together of just driving, you know, there were no cars on the road, driving into the dark night, under the stars. And, you know, it doesn't sound like, I guess you just have to, you know, experience this kind of thing. But it just was this liberation of, I don't even know, both of us, without even talking, and we didn't know each other at this point really that well, so it's just this really intense experience, and afterwards we just kind of looked at each other like, did you feel that? And he was like, yeah, I felt that, you know, like just this kind of like, what just happened? And then, you know, the third time we hung out, we went out to dinner, and we're sitting on the beach, and all of a sudden we see all these fireworks along the beach going off, and people setting off these wish lanterns, and they're shooting stars, and it was just like, what is going on?
Yeah.
And, so every time we hung out, there was just something more
incredible
and more
that put you
in
the direction of, we cannot ignore this.
Yeah, like, if you, at one point we were like, okay, are we being filmed for, like, The Bachelorette or some reality TV show? Because it really felt like somebody was putting us into
it's
a
so
set.
Crazy.
And, you know, one night we were walking on the beach and we were just kind of like, oh, it'd be nice to have dinner on the beach. And then this little Indian man runs out with a blanket and some candles and puts the blanket out on the beach. I mean, nobody else is having dinner on the beach.
Picnic.
Nobody else has this set up. And we're like, well, how did this happen? And he's like, well, would you like a menu? And we're like, oh, yes, please. And I mean, just little things like that that just, you know.
Did you ever experience a connection like that before?
Never. I mean, I've had, you know, I have to honor the previous partners that I've had. I have felt deep connections with them on different levels, but nothing like this. This was something that felt like I almost didn't even have any control over.
Wow. And would you like call him the one? Or don't you think there is something as the one?
You know, I actually don't believe that there is something as the one. I actually do believe that we're not naturally monogamous. I don't think that we're the type of animal that is necessarily destined to be with one other person. But amazingly, I feel like I have, despite my belief in this, I actually feel like he is my one. And I would never, we both have to keep ourselves open to the possibility that that's never, that we can change, and we have to respect that we both are constantly choosing to be together. But at this point in my life, and I think I'll probably feel this way for the rest of my life, mm-hmm. I'm happy to choose this man every single day of my life.
How wonderful. Yeah. Yeah. Otherwise, you wouldn't have
married. Exactly. Yeah. Well,
and so then fast forward to that moment. Did he ask you, or did it again happen, sort of?
It was another one of these funny, spontaneous, funny things. He was actually set to leave to go home to Australia. Well, he was actually going to go on a surf trip to Samoa with his best mate. And so we were kind of thinking, oh, okay, well, maybe at some point I'll come and visit you in Australia and see if this goes anywhere. But before he left, that we found some really cheap flights to the Maldives. And so we thought, oh, okay, we'll go to the Maldives. And just to, like, say goodbye and just kind of have, like, a nice little close, like, almost an end to our relationship. Not really end. We thought that at some point we would connect
again.
But
you also know, like, okay, when you travel, you meet someone, like, this romance, sort of honor it, and then...
Yeah, we were kind of not ready to let it go, but just feeling like, okay, well, I'll see you in maybe 6 months. I'll come visit you in Australia or something. And anyway, so we get to the Maldives, and we did a little bit of island hopping just on the fly. We didn't have any plans to go, say, in one of these beautiful resorts or anything like this. We just kind of hopped on a boat and ended up on this cute little island that happened to have a great surf spot. And we just rocked up to this beautiful little spot. I mean, this I don't even know how we got there. This truck picked us up from a boat. I don't even know how we got on this boat, this ferry. This truck arrived, picked us up, threw all of our luggage onto the back of it, and picked us up. And we're like, okay, come on. And we were like, we don't know where we're going, but okay. And then they dropped us off, and this beautiful setting just unfolded right before us of this epic beach, just white, beautiful white sand beach and beautiful palm trees and this water, this beautiful water that I'd never seen a color like this before. And it immediately started raining. And so I was so excited, and we had already been traveling all day. So we just ran into the water in the middle of this rainstorm. And we're just having fun, and all of a sudden, he just kind of looks at me, because we're hugging or something, and he just kind of looked at me, and he was like, you know, I always thought I would propose to my wife in the rain. And we had literally just talked about how, you know, we didn't really believe in marriage and all of this stuff, probably about an hour before.
Wow.
And so I kind of just looked at him and kind of laughed, and I was like, oh, okay, haha, that's interesting, good story. And then we kind of were like a little bit quiet for the rest of the day. And then we ended up talking about it again later that night. And he was like, oh, that's kind of funny how that happened earlier. And I was like, yeah, it was. And he was like, kind of just gauging, I think, maybe my reaction. He was like, do you want to get married? And I just shook my head. And he was like, I need you to say something. And I was like, yeah. And he was like, do you want to get married tomorrow? And I was like, yeah. And I was like, do you want to get married tomorrow? And he was like, yes.
No, so crazy.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So we got married the next day, and not legally married, but the next day we exchanged, we wrote vows, and we exchanged vows with each other on the beach.
Wow.
And then, so we call that, I mean, we consider that our wedding date. We got married legally the following year on the exact same date, and then we had a big wedding celebration.
Where was it, in Australia?
You know, in Australia. Yeah.
Wow, so that was...
So we have three weddings. We had three wedding ceremonies.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
And now we're 4 years
yes.
past that moment.
Yep.
And really from that moment on, that you stepped on the plane to India, everything changed for you. You left
everything.
America, you left your law job for good, you married someone
mm-hmm.
other than yourself.
Yep.
You started a new life in Australia.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's
a lot of change. It's
yeah.
amazing. So just, I've got a few more questions, but like as an American girl,
uh-huh.
what would you say is the very... best thing about the USA and the very worst thing?
Oh. You know, it's been nice to actually live overseas, because when I was living in America, I'm sorry to say, I really didn't like it. I didn't appreciate anything about it. No, I really...
feel a connection with your country?
No, I really didn't feel connected to the culture in a lot of ways. I think because I grew up basically on a farm and playing in the forest, I had a very peaceful, natural childhood. Basically like every little girl's dream, I had horses and... you know, puppies and kittens and bunnies and beautiful forest with a stream running through it. And yeah, I really just spent a lot of time in nature. And so when I left, you know, when I went into public school and saw all this stress and anxiety and all of this kind of striving and this want and this almost desperation, even in young people, I just couldn't connect with that. So I traveled a lot from as early as I could. But now being away from it, I actually see that there is a lot to value about American culture. Americans are really friendly.
Yes.
Which I don't think a lot of people know, because I think seeing the stuff that other people are seeing on TV about America, like the reality TV shows, of like,
it
looks like we're crazy. Yeah, we look like we're crazy people, but actually, Americans are really willing to help you. They're really excitable. Always ready to celebrate something. I think initially, if they don't know you, they're a little bit standoffish. But as soon as they get to know you, as soon as you show them any sign of friendliness, they will embrace you immediately, which is really nice. And I also deeply miss my connection to the land. I felt really connected, obviously, as a child growing up playing in the forest.
In such a beautiful place.
It's a really, really beautiful, diverse land. Mm. It's a really special place.
And then the worst thing
about it? I think what I was saying, the things I didn't connect with when I was younger and seeing that at early on, there's a lot of striving. There's a lot of, you know, people are really trying to keep up with the Joneses. Everybody's really wanting mm-hmm. the next thing. And it's sad because, you know, Americans, we have so much in America. And the idea that we feel like there's not enough is a little bit disappointing, because we have so much. And, yeah, I hope it's changing. I don't know. Maybe.
Hmm. So would you still consider America sort of as your home, or is Australia really your home now?
You know what's funny? I actually don't. I feel at home only in myself. I love America. I love Australia. They're both wonderful places to live. But neither of them really feel like home. I love being in Sri Lanka. I haven't really felt this deep connection to a place as much as I've felt a deep connection to myself. I think, and this is coming from a lot of travel. And anytime
it sounds wonderful
in myself, I feel really, and if I feel disconnected from myself, I feel like I have no home. And as soon as I, you know, do some yoga or some meditation or whatever it is that I need to do to connect with myself, I immediately feel...
Then you're good wherever
like
you are, basically.
Home. Yeah, it's quite nice, actually.
So for people who are thinking about making such a drastic change in their life, is there one thing that you, like, you moved, you got married, and then you moved to Australia, is there one thing which you didn't see coming, which, like, sort of... or two things, like, that really surprised you or annoyed you, or like, oh, if I would have known this?
Yeah, it was actually because Mitch and I had such a really strong connection at the start, and when I first moved to Australia, you know, we had almost to balance these two aspects of having this deep connection, of almost not even having a choice of being together. We had to be together. There was really no other option. But at the same time, that put so much pressure on us. And me moving, I didn't know any of his friends. As soon as I got to Australia, we moved in with his friends, who just were like, oh, okay. And his friends are all very rational people, like doctors and physios and things like that. And so I think they were all kind of just like, okay, so Mitch went to India.
This
and
is pretty intense.
This crazy yoga teacher.
This Brittany, whose name is now Brit because you changed your name.
Exactly. Yeah, they're just like, who is this girl? And they thought I was crazy. They thought Mitch was crazy.
They thought this was a big fairy tale.
They thought it's
gonna,
not
going
to last. Yeah, and so I think we put a lot of pressure on ourselves to be this perfect couple and show that, no, we're actually serious about each other and this isn't just a holiday romance. And so because of this pressure, we didn't allow ourselves to really kind of bring up stuff that might have been going on. I mean, because we knew each other on this soul level. But then there's the
all
other
these
stuff.
Things around.
Yeah, the stories that we have. And, you know, he didn't know that I had suffered with panic attacks when he first met, because, of course, we don't show this to each other. And so, you know, of course, when I start having panic attacks, he's like, oh, okay. Like, and he was so supportive of this. And he's like, okay, well, I just would navigate through this and work through this. And he's such a solid kind of mountain man. So he's really able to kind of be that solid base of support, which was so useful for me. But I think, and he would never say anything, okay, like, it might be getting a bit much. And he was just always there to support me. And so I think, you know, after a while, he was just kind of like, he needed to kind of step back and take care of himself. And I didn't notice that because I was so stuck on trying to get myself sorted and situated in a new country and meeting all of his friends and trying to find a job and, you know, and just changing my whole life and changing my name. Mm-hmm. And I think there was a little bit of resentment that grew just because I was relying on him for so much and he couldn't really say anything, because I think he felt like, well, she's sacrificed so much. I mean, I have to take care of her. And so there was, the first year was actually really tumultuous in a lot of ways because of this. So I would say, I guess, in the advice, especially if you're moving to another country to be with a partner, is, you really want to make sure that you've done your research on the place. I mean, in my situation, I had no idea I was going to be moving to Australia, so I didn't really do. And I'd never even thought about Australia in my whole life. I never thought I would go to Australia. It was just kind of one of those low on the list kind of places, just because it's English speaking and seemed just like America. Sorry, Australians. So I would just say, really make sure you do your homework and do your research and make sure you have your own kind of thing.
Because that's what saved you, sort of like getting into horses there, right?
Yeah, so it's something you did recently, back home. Yeah, just recently I got into horseback riding. But even, it was a little bit of a kind of blow to the ego to go from being a lawyer to taking a job as a retailer at Lululemon. But
your pants, I love all your
pants. Yeah, I know, I've got so many.
Do you ever throw some gift?
Yeah, in my mind, I was like, oh my gosh, this is an ego bash. But then I was like, oh, it's actually so nice because I've met all these really amazing, like-minded people through work. And I didn't realize that for the first year, that's what I was missing, because I had been friends with all of Mitch's friends, who are lovely, and they're some of my closest friends now. But at the time, I'm like, these are strangers that don't know me. And yeah, they know me as Mitch's partner. And yeah, so it was, they didn't know me. And so, yeah, I would say just, even if it's folding pants for Lululemon or whatever, just take any job just to meet people and make your own friends and just
go on a sports club or do whatever to sort of create something for yourself.
Exactly.
Yeah, that sounds very a good takeaway.
Yeah.
Okay, I've got many more things to ask, but I just want
story.
This was the love story and I love it. And now you're writing a book about it.
Which is why I have to write a book, because it's such a long, rich story as well. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. But the book is not about your story, it's about unconditional love, right?
I mean, I do tell it in relation to my own personal life. It is technically a memoir, and there is some juicy relationship stuff in there, and some really vulnerable stuff in there about basically me and my life and what I was going through, and basically the foundation that was set in order for me to be able to kind of come into this position in my life or situation in my life where I could trust myself that I was making the right decision. But the idea, that's really what the book is about, basically being able to kind of connect in with this unconditional love, or this aspect that's, it goes beyond the love that you can have with a partner. It goes beyond even the love that you can have with your friends or with your family members. There's, I believe, an aspect of love that exists in all things. It kind of permeates all things. This anahata nadam, this kind of basically this underlying essence of love that weaves its way through all things. And as soon as we connect in with that, deep within ourselves and deep within all things that exist. So, I mean, you could be in love with a flower, you could be in love with a dog, you could be in love with the chair that you're sitting on, you could be in love with the food that you're eating, you can be in love with literally everything. So the first kind of step is really finding that deep love, this kind of this love that doesn't require any kind of cause. So it's not like, oh, I love myself because of this and this and this. It's just...
There is just love.
It's just love. And it's not, I love this chair because it's supporting me. It's just like, just love the chair.
But wait a minute. Is this like a constant state?
Well, I mean, ideally.
Coming and going.
It would be great to be a constant state. I don't think most of... I mean, I certainly haven't found that constant state. I'd love to be in that constant state. But it's just a remembering, and it's just a constant remembering.
That you can go back to it.
Yeah, coming back to it again and again and again and again.
So is this book explaining about it, or is it...
Yeah, so as I talk about my life, I weave in a lot of yogic kind of philosophy and a little bit of Buddhist philosophy as well, and more, and also just regular philosophy that's, just quite interesting. I really just love philosophy, and so I weave it through. But it's really just kind of setting the tone of being able to find these different ways to connect in with this love throughout your life, and recognizing that, sometimes when you're going through something that feels painful, finding the love there. And when you're going through something that feels wonderful, find the love there. And just finding the love in all situations, and not in this way of being like, oh, pain doesn't exist, suffering doesn't exist. Honoring that we do have pain, we do have suffering. Things are hard. Sometimes life can just be a little bit shitty. Sometimes it just sucks.
And we need to accept that
and
too.
Accept that and not be like, no, I only, good vibes only, like I only have love. Yeah. It's like, no, I love the pain.
Fear,
I love the suffering.
Fears.
Yeah, like I appreciate this because we're dynamic creatures that are capable of feeling
and we
so
should.
Much.
We should not push it away because...
Well, we can't. It's literally impossible to push away. We can only push it inside of us deeper and deeper, and then it manifests in all of these crazy ways for me. It was panic attacks constantly because I never dealt with these things that were coming up. And so, but it's just the idea of being able to just love it all. Like, you can still, experience the pain, the suffering, whatever it needs to come up, but still love it and appreciate it for being there and just kind of recognizing that ultimately it's all perfect and it's all wonderful. And
So it sounds like in this project of writing the book, everything comes together because it's also rational, because you try to like connect all these things, and then with yoga and then with love and then your own story. That's beautiful.
Yeah, it's really therapeutic actually for me to write as well. You know, initially when I started writing, I was like, oh, I wonder if people will like this. And then I was like, you know what? I'm just going to write this for myself.
See where it goes.
Hopefully other people resonate. I think people will, because I think we all kind of go through, as a human, as a species, I think we all kind of go through the same struggles and the same insecurities and fears and, oh, what's going to happen, especially when, I was 29 when I met Mitch. And so, that's not quite so old in, I think, other countries, but in America, a lot of my friends had already found their person and were already married. And everybody, I was the girl at every wedding when, like, the father of the bride would be like, oh, where's your fella? When are you next? And I'm like, I don't really have one. I don't know. That's why I just gave myself a ring so I could be like, I'm married already to myself.
Yeah.
And then I would get these kind of funny looks. But, at 29, when I was starting to think, okay, well, maybe, am I missing something? Is there something wrong with me? And then I kind of realized, no, like,
I'm okay.
I'm great, actually. And I'm so worthy of marrying myself. And I would love to be married to somebody like me. And I take such good care of myself. And I know when I need a good bath. And when I know I need a bath, I'll draw myself a bath. Or if I need to take myself on a date, I'll take myself on a date.
Or when I need some alone time.
Yeah,
or when I need to call a friend. Yeah.
Yeah, so just being aware, I'm not relying on somebody else to bring that love into my life, to bring that love into my life myself.
Hey, and when you were studying law, you were doing a lot of yoga. So did that practice always continue to grow and to be very a big part of your life? Or was it on and off?
It was from the moment I practiced a little bit of yoga in undergrad when I was in university. But then it wasn't until I did a yoga retreat with a teacher who's an Anyasara teacher. And it was just because she just really weaved in this philosophy that I had never considered before. And that was the really aspect of deep for me was the philosophy. Like, I liked the postures. I've always been physical, so I liked that. But that wasn't what drew me into yoga. It was the philosophy and just this idea. I think she was just describing, as you're breathing, imagining that, the goddess or the divine mother is dancing through your whole being. And I was like, oh, wow, that is just, that felt like being on drugs. I was like, oh, my gosh, I can feel this. And it felt so enlivening and just amazing. And so from that moment onward, I just practiced as consistently as possible. My practice style has changed. Sometimes yoga just looks like doing a couple of yin poses in bed and then doing some pranayama and maybe some yoga nidra or some meditation in the morning or something like this.
I really like that. I'm totally pro allowing your yoga to live with you rather than just really focus on one particular practice every day. No matter how you feel, you go on the mat and do ashtanga or hapata, you do your vinyasa.
Yeah.
I really like the idea that you feel how you feel and then do the yoga that you think you need.
Exactly. And it changes as well.
It changes. You change.
Yeah. I'm physically, and I'm not old by any means, but, at 33, I do start to feel like were postures I used to do so easily. Now, I've got this pain or tension in my knees and I think, okay, well, I could try to do what I was doing when I was 25 or I could just do what I can do at 33. Yeah. Something else. This is fine. And I used to do a lot more vinyasa, I think, because I had a lot of kind of built up energy that needed to move around from sitting a lot. And so
it's very natural.
Yeah. And it's really nice. I love
how
vinyasa.
You explain vinyasa.
This isn't mine. I can't claim this.
I use it now too because I like it and we should share it. And how do you explain vinyasa, Brit?
So one of my teachers, Michelle Merrifield or Michelle Cassidy on the Gold Coast, she is the one that described this to me. She calls it purposeful placement of body with breath. And I just think it just clearly and practically defines the elements of vinyasa. So you have your purpose and you're placing your body specifically with the breath. And so it's just just this really simple idea of you have your purpose or your intention. So you always set your intention before you practice of why you're there. And
can be something small, right?
Yeah. Oh, easy. Yeah. It can be whatever, it can be something. It doesn't have to be really profound. It doesn't have to be like, oh, I'm enlightened. It can be, I'm just going to let myself have 90 minutes away from my phone and my kids.
Yeah,
and perfect. It's just like, I'm not going to think about as much as I can. I have the intention or the resolve to not obsess over my laundry list of things to do.
Mm.
And throughout the rest of the practice, maybe you just devote that time to yourself. You know, and it can be super simple. But as long as you're synchronizing or letting your breath be what inspires the movement and connecting in with your intention while you practice, I think that's really beautiful. Yeah, and it's all really just about getting that energy moving in the body anyway, so you can have this nice release of, yeah, some of that pent up stuff.
And is vinyasa what you like to teach most?
Well, it used to be, but now, I don't know, I've had a big change in the last year, I would say. So I used to be all about the vinyasa, and now I'm all about the yin.
Yeah, wonderful.
All about the yin.
That's
yeah.
Nice.
It's really nice. I think it's useful for, you know, for a lot of people just to stay grounded, and it's a nice opportunity to also, I feel like I have a captive audience, and because I love philosophy so much, I have 90 minutes to talk about yoga,
whatever,
philosophy.
While they are in a certain pose.
Oh, yeah. And I'm like, you know what? I don't mind if you're tuning me out for the whole 90 minutes. Some aspect on a cellular level, you're hearing what I'm saying. So you can sit there and think about whatever. But on a cellular level, this is going in there. So I just really enjoy
that. Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Hey, Britt, before we're going to catch some dinner together.
Yes.
It's beautiful. It's my last evening meal here.
Oh,
so it's special.
I miss you.
My favorite part of the podcast will start now.
Okay.
And it's called the human as fuck quiz.
Okay.
So I'm going to throw questions at you.
Okay.
And ideas that you answer them quickly and shortly.
Okay.
Okay.
Those are like the two things I'm not good at, is quick and short. I am like...
Okay,
I'll try.
You have a little practice here.
This is me being human as fuck.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm slow and deliberate.
Okay. But you just go, what first thing in mind, really. Keep it in mind.
Okay.
Here we go. Favorite yoga brand?
I don't know. I only know Lululemon because I work there.
Okay. Sunset or sunrise?
Sunrise.
Swimming or surfing?
Surfing.
Kale or spinach?
Ooh, kale.
A whale or a tiger?
Oh, that's a tough one. Tiger.
Have you ever been arrested?
Yes.
Top or bottom?
Hmm?
Top or bottom?
Position? Oh, bottom. I'm lazy.
Twist or hip opener?
Ooh, twist while I'm doing a hip opener.
Wine or arak?
Wine.
Favorite place in the world?
Heraclea.
Oh, beautiful. A guilty pleasure? Something, a guilty pleasure, something you enjoy, but you feel a bit guilty while you're enjoying it.
I have to give it a little bit of an explanation. When I'm having a really, really bad day, once every month or once every 2 months, I might take a bath, roll a cigarette from my own tobacco and have a little puff of this.
I like your honesty. Thank you. Then, do you ever lie?
Yes.
Truth or dare?
Yes.
No, truth or dare?
Oh,
what would
okay.
you choose? Yeah.
Oh, dare.
Okay, asana or meditation? Asana or meditation?
Meditation.
Bolster or block?
Bolster.
What do you love most about Mitch?
His eyes.
What do you need to work on?
Saying no.
Favorite quote?
It is actually from Jack Kornfield, and it goes, I'm going to butcher it, but it goes something like this. The purpose of our spiritual practice is not to perfect ourselves, it is to perfect our love.
Oh, beautiful. Mm. And now then a question which maybe is in line with that. What does the world need more of?
I would say the world probably needs more of... this is a hard one, actually. I'm thinking
Didn't
about
you say
it too
it in
much
your
now.
Quotes?
Well, I know, but I feel like I've been talking so much about love.
But fair enough, maybe it's like the red thread in your life.
Maybe it is the red thread of my life. Okay, we'll say love. But I'm gonna add in contentment. I think contentment.
Okay.
Because we can't love without until we're content.
Oh, that is beautiful. All right, Britt. So when can we expect this book of yours?
Oh my
With
goodness.
The title is not gonna be revealed, guys.
Well, my goal was to finish it by the 17th of March, and that is not happening.
That is not happening. Life happened, but
Sri Lanka happened, surfing happened. I hope that it will be published by the end of this year at the very latest.
All right. And how can people stay up to date if they're curious about this book of love?
I'm on Instagram.
How can they find you?
Yes, it's Brit_the_hunter. So Brit the Hunter.
Amazing surname.
Yes.
Brit, I want to thank you so much that you shared your love story with us.
Thank you for asking.
Your ideas on yoga and some well, some beautiful history of your life. I'm so happy that we met here and that I hope we meet again next year.
Me too.
Thank you so much and namaste everyone. We'll see you soon next week. All right, guys, so I want to thank you so much for listening. Honestly, I'm so happy to share all these beautiful stories on a platform like this, and I'm really excited to have you all listening. Just a small note that from now on, the uneven episodes will continue to be in English, but the even episodes will be in Dutch. And it's just because I'm back in my homeland, Holland or the Netherlands, and I've got some super exciting conversations planned with wonderful people, but they're all Dutch and we sort of prefer to speak in our own language. But do not worry, the uneven episodes will remain or will continue to be in English. So once again, thank you so much for listening and please, please, please take a little moment to like and subscribe. Namaste and see you soon.